How do you introduce yourself in English?
So I normally say, if I to random people, I just say Jonas, because that's like easier for them to remember. But like people hang around, like they know I'm European, and then I go by Jonas normally.
So. All right. Mm-hmm. I might switch it up a little bit.
That's just all right. Because.
All right. Well, welcome to the 19th episode of our podcast, Up on Fall, where we talk all about foiling. And today, again, we're the guest in our guest's place. Thank you very much, Jonas, for having us. You might know him from ice hockey. He used to play for Davos. He used to play in the NHL and then back in Switzerland in Biel. And he changed the aggregate state of the water from solid to liquid. And he's downwinding Lake Neuchâtel 2-3 times a week sometimes. And it's really cool. He gives coachings as well. Thank you, Jonas, for coming on the show. Is there anything you need to add or want to correct me?
No, I think that's about it. We'll probably get into details during this podcast. So I'm excited to be here and happy to give you guys some insights about my foiling story.
Let's just start with that foiling story.
Are you gonna give Matt a flat water paddle up lesson in that river behind after the podcast?
We might. I don't know. We were hoping for some wind today. Forecast doesn't look as good as when we organized everything, but we'll see what we're gonna do.
Tomorrow's just looks cold.
It is cold, no matter where you're at in Switzerland right now. So yeah, it's probably have to worry about some ice on the foil. But no, it's all good.
Maybe we can get into that later on as well. But how did you end up on the water? Have you always been like surfing or?
Yeah, actually, I've been into water sports for quite a while. My parents used to have a sailboat on Lake Constance, and so I still own it with a couple of friends. So I still get to sail here and there, but that's kind of how I got introduced into water sport. I tried windsurfing when I was a kid. I was sailing those small Optimist boats.
Well?
Yeah, so that's how I got into water sports and wind sports. So I got some background there. I even later on when I was playing in North America, I had a couple of sailboats. I had a hobby cap for a 16 for a while. I had an A cap for a little bit. So it was more about sailing, but then I kind of started with kiting and kind of went from there, I guess.
Did you used to sail regattas on Optimist?
No, it was just basic for us. It was mainly summer holidays where we spent on the boat. For us, it was more like people go camping. So we had the boat. So we would just sail around Lake Constance and, Great memory. So I always enjoyed that. And so it was more kind of for fun thing. It wasn't also because I was growing up in Ornash, which is like a half an hour away from the lake or even more than that. So it wasn't that we would just get there whenever it's windy, like in Lake of Constance, not the windiest spot anyway. So I guess it was more like a part-time kind of thing. So.
But there can be wind, there can be waves as well.
I know. I'm still thinking about crossing from Switzerland to Germany or the other way around when we got good conditions. It's a little far away from here, and I haven't figured the planning everything out exactly. Probably more a summer project because it's going to be freezing right now. But we'll see. It's still out there. But at the same time, I measure distance. If you just go straight across, it's only 10K, so which is shorter than the run we normally do. So I'm hoping for some westerlies where you could go from. I don't know, from Constance all the way to Bregenz would be great, but
how long would that be?
I don't know. I think it's like 30, 40K, probably more than that.
We're going to put it in the video here.
I'll have to measure it.
For sure. How did you manage to, train as a professional hockey player and do all these water sports at the same time?
Well, for me, it was like mainly a summer thing. Like when I started playing hockey professionally, like, all the sailing was kind of before that, and then the little boat and vacation with the family. And then once I got when I was 18, I signed my first contract in Davos and moved there, went to school, finished school, so I was up there in total for 6 years. So water sport was kind of like definitely not the main thing when I was up there. It was all about hockey, and actually learned to kite. I got back into water sports through kiting, which I picked up, I think, 2012. So that's when I learned to kite. And even before that, I always thought kiting would be great. But I took a summer holiday in Thailand to finally sign up for some lessons and getting into kiting. And pretty much the only time I really gotten into kiting in North America was I think 2012, just because there was the lockout. So the season didn't start. We didn't play. So I ended up, a buddy of mine from Switzerland, like he was over there for a few months, and we ended up just, I would just skate in the morning and then we go kite surfing in the afternoon. So that's how I progressed some trips down to Mexico and stuff. So great memories from those times.
That sounds amazing. Do people kite on Lake Davos as well?
Back when I was up there, I wasn't allowed to. I think few guys do now, where it's normally allowed in most lakes in Switzerland, unless it's officially banned. But back then, when I was up in Davos, it was still pretty much banned everywhere unless they made an exemption. So I never kited on Lake Davos, okay. So I can't talk about that.
Maybe snow kiting though.
Yeah, it could be like we tried. Well, there, I guess there. Yeah, you could go there, but there, I think there's better spot up at Fluela or stuff where you get even nicer conditions.
Do you still kite anymore?
I haven't kited in forever, to be honest. I love kiting. I was involved with a kite brand and stuff, but then I started to learn to wing foil mainly. Well, I started kite foiling mainly because in Switzerland, otherwise you just sit on the beach and watch all the other guys going upwind on foil, and you're trying to, well, I need two knots more to go to just be able to stay where I'm at.
Terrible.
So that's why I got into kite foiling, and then actually got into wing foiling because the lake out here, because I know I can't kite. There's too many trees, and it wouldn't be allowed because it's a nature reserve on the other side. So I don't think they would be happy if all the birds over there, if I would kite here. But I have.
Are you allowed to wing foil here?
I have wing foiled here, so there's no ban on that. So okay.
Good to know.
I have wing foiled. That's why I got into wing foiling, and I thought, well, it looks a little stupid at the beginning, and then, but as once I was actually doing it, I was loving it, and I mean, at the beginning, I said, well, I use it for here, and then I go like, well, I kite when it's light wind, then I kite foil and use wing foiling for whatever, and then. As I got better, I would just the minimum wind range when I started the wing foiling just dropped and dropped till I pretty much didn't touch the kites anymore. So that was it was about that.
Yeah, that is actually how many people get on foil. So first it was kite foiling.
Yeah.
How was that the switch from the twin tip to the foil? Because I remember it took me a while. I didn't have a coach. I don't know if you had one, but with the twin tip, you press against the board, and with the foil, you need to be up over the foil. And that was a huge thing. When I figured that out, I was like, oh, that's how it should work. How was that for you?
Yeah, it was similar. Like I thought, like normally I'm pretty good in learning new things just with my background from being an athlete and stuff. Also, yeah, for me, it was clear kiting, I already knew kiting. So I think back when, I don't remember when it was, but I think it was 2016 or 17 when I learned to kite foil. So back then I don't think there was even wing foiling, so that was pretty much kite foiling was the only option, I guess. And for me, it was mainly to take advantage of the light winds. So at the beginning, you try in light winds, which won't work anyway. And then actually, I think we went to vacation. I said, well, I'm not going to go home before I learn to. And because of hockey and always worried about injuring myself, I also started with doing strapless. So like started strapless with the foil, which is even a little tougher at the beginning just to get the board and the foil in the right place to get going. But yeah, totally as you said, like it's, I think like foiling's tough because you have nothing to compare it to because it's so different. Like you, as you said, you're really standing on top of something. I always explaining like while you're standing on top of a plane and you're trying to fly the plane by just moving slight movement. So if kind of push too much on your heel, the plane's just taken off the wrong way. So that definitely happened a couple of times to me at the beginning. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And I think wing foiling came afterwards.
That was easy then compared.
It took me a little bit. It took me just, I guess, 2 or 3 hours to figure out the whole, like how to hold the wing, how to power up. And then once on foil, it was pretty easy. Yeah. But to kind of get going and the whole feeling, the balance was different at the beginning to stand on it and not having power. Where on kiting, you get power and you're powered up, right? When you are on foil, or you pretty much get on foil straight away. And in winging, just that planing phase to go the right direction and just the wing handling, even though I knew what like wind directions and go upwind, go downwind, like in theory I knew, but it still took some getting used to like the whole new sensation. But it was probably 2-3 lessons or 3 hours to just I always like to figure things out myself. So even that, I pretty much figured out myself or watched some YouTube tutorials. And that's kind of like how I taught myself wing foiling.
And then did you, when did the transition start to downwinding? Because that's probably what you do the most.
But first yeah. We want to know, since we are talking about wing foiling, if you ever combined the wing with the ice skates.
No, I haven't. We were already joking back when I was still involved with the kite brand that we should do like whatever speed record like on ice and do it on yeah. ice with the kite, because friction should be even less than what it is with a foil. Same. But we never gotten into, and I don't know. I'm not, even though I'm used to skates, I'm not used to go at high speed on skates.
So. You probably have to wear all your protection gear from ice hockey. Yeah, exactly. It looks super dangerous.
Yeah, no, I would be a little worried. So yeah, I know. But no, I never need, neither with wing nor the kite. I mean, I've snow kited. Not in a while. I don't think I ever snow kite the whole last season, but I know I think 2 weeks from now I'll give it another shot, the snow kiting, just because a buddy of mine, he turns 40, and he invited a couple of friends to go snow kiting for his 40th birthday. So that's when I'll be snow kiting again. So we hope for some decent conditions.
Nice, very cool. Well, last year there was no snow basically, so it was really hard to go. I've never gone last year, so maybe this season. But then, as I said, you transitioned to downwinding. Maybe pump foiling first?
I learned wing foiling first and then dock starting, which is convenient here. So if there's no wind, I can just jump off the dock and try some dock starting. So I've done that kind of parallel with the wing foiling if there was no wind. And we actually traveled Australia, what was it, a little year and a half ago with the family and whatever. And I pretty much took my wing foil gear with me and also some kite foil gear. And I remember I was winging, it was in a bay, and then I saw this guy on a paddle with the foil and go, what's this guy doing? Like, why don't you just get a wing and you'd be foiling? And then I kind of looked into it, what it was, and I go like, well, actually, it could be pretty cool to just go from place A to B on just foil, and don't need to have to worry about a wing you have to flag out and worry about. I think for me, it was already, I mean, when I started like kiting, for me, the fascinating part was always like wave riding on a surfboard. But in Switzerland, the side, if you have like whatever 30 knots westerly winds, you have like the one spot where you get some waves, but otherwise it's not really the wave riding spot. So for me, it was always using that energy from the waves to kind of propel myself forward and then kind of play with the nature, play with the wave. That was always the fascinating part. So then once you're foiling, like even with kite foiling, you needed smaller waves to kind of play in the waves. But you always had the kite that was annoying. Then I go with wing foiling. Well, suddenly like you can just flag out the wing and worry more about surfing like small bumps. And then with only having the paddle in your hand, it gotten like to a whole other level. And I think it's also the adventure part that kind of is part of it too, to, you know, like you make the commitment to go from point A to B. And it's, for me, it's almost like ski touring, where like winging's more like whatever on the regular slopes or in the resort skiing, where like downwinding for me is almost like powder skiing or like ski touring, where like you have to plan, you have to take, you decide on your gear, you have to bring everything and make sure you're ready for whatever happens. So for me, it's like downwinding is kind of like also that adventure part that kind of put me on or still excites me. And at the same time, for me, like when I saw that in Australia and then I looked into it, I go like, well, is it even possible in Switzerland? So like that was a year and a half or almost 2 years ago. So like nobody really knew back then. Like I know like Steve Fleury, like he was doing it here and there on Lake Geneva. So I saw a clip of that and go like, well, if he does it there, it's got to be possible. And then I kind of gotten into it and tried to get my way or figure out the way to get this to the same sensation.
And now when you say it's an adventure, maybe you can walk us through how it looks like. Go by car probably to the place in Neuchâtel, and then what happens?
Yeah, so like for me, like pretty much all the runs we do, like it's me and Simon, so it's Niels Mango on Instagram. So pretty much the two of us, we kind of gotten into it almost at the same time, and we pretty much all the runs we do now, we pretty much just look on Google Maps and kind of say, well, maybe we could start here, and if we would end up here, we are right. So it was all trial and error, I guess. And now we got a pretty nice setup, just also with the public transport, with the trains we take up wind. So depending what wind directions, so with Lake Neuchâtel, there are pretty much two wind directions. It's southwesterlies or northeasterlies. So southwesterlies, we normally start in Saint-Blaise. So I drive to Saint-Blaise, get into the wetsuit, get all my gear ready, and then I walk to the train station. So now we actually got a new train, which would go directly up to Concis all the way to Yverdon. Yeah,
they changed the new timetable.
Yeah, nice. They changed the trains a little bit. So you pretty much have there are two train stations in Saint-Blaise. One's like close to the lake, which is convenient because it's a 2-minute walk. And the other one's a little further away, but it has all the long distance trains. So if you go there, it's a 15-minute walk. But yeah, so you got two options. So even if you miss the first train down by the lake, you have a second chance. So that's an advantage. But yeah, so we take the train either from right from the lake, then we change trains in Neuchâtel and jump on the train that goes up the lake, depending which way you look at it. For me, it's up the lake. Simon goes, it's down the lake. But so we go up the lake, and depending how far you want to go, well, I guess the only downside is if you want to do short run, it's just Saint-Blaise Neuchâtel, which is about 5K, which I think it's a pretty cool beginner run, unless it's like super windy as it was the other day. Then it gets pretty crazy down there with backwash and everything. So it's not the easiest place to start, but otherwise it's a good run. And the only downside with the train part is that the next run that's a little longer is then I think 25K because you have to go up to Gorgie, because there are a few stations in between, but they're quite far away from the lake. So either you go there and walk half an hour or even more than that to down to the lake. But so that's kind of like a big skip or big gap between the 5K run and the 25K run. So you'd rather be sure you get on foil, because if you do a 5K run just on your board and pretty much paddle the whole way, that's okay. That's
me 1.5 to 2 hours. So yeah,
exactly. But it's reasonable. But if you do 25K, so times
the whole day,
times five, so you're definitely gonna be out there for a little longer than that.
So it's like an hack in Switzerland with this train. And so to Darwin's, and with this hack, like how many runs can you do in one afternoon, for example?
So you can do the short runs, like the 5K runs. I mean, now if I get on foil, and sometimes I even paddle up, like if you normally get in the water in like a harbor. So I normally, now I can even flat water paddle up in the harbor, get out in the bumps and pretty much downwinded in one stretch. So it's a 5K run, normally takes me, I don't know, 20 minutes, something like that. So you can take, I don't know, as many turns as you want, but at the same time, you spend a lot of time on the train. So we normally just do the 25K run, which is a little more train riding, but at the end you can downwind for whatever, an hour and a half, depending on wind strength and how big the bumps are. So we normally try to do that. Simon and I, we already discussed if we are able to do 100K a day, so that would be the goal. If you do three runs, well, now we can go a little further, we can do 30K runs. So you almost have to do three runs and the short one, something like that, to do 100K in a day. So we're still working on that planning, but it's pretty cool. I think like what put me off at the beginning with downwinding, like, well, I'm always relying on somebody else to shuttle and stuff, because well, now with my schedule, I'm normally pretty flexible during the week, but most guys, they work during the week. So you have to find somebody who can shuttle, you can shuttle with, but now with the train, I'm pretty much self-sufficient. Even the other day, I pretty much just went to Saint-Blaise, jumped on the train, and I could do a 30K run just by myself. And that's I guess the advantage, even though I still like the camaraderie and kind of like the social aspect of downwinding. But even then, like you get to down to Saint-Blaise, you always have somebody who's either pump foiling in the waves or is working on his paddle ups and stuff. So you always have people to talk to. And even if you go on the train, I think the fun part is almost like the drive, the train ride up, where you have plenty of things to discuss on, and so it's pretty social, I guess.
Plus, it's cool if you take the train first; your wetsuit's not wet, so you're not messing up the whole train. But the first time I actually took the train was with six other downwinders, and it was super cool. There was no one in the train, but I can imagine it can get pretty cramped. You have knives on your board, basically huge boards, paddles, and you walk in next to these people in suits who have to go to work. Well, how was that the first time you went? Were you uncomfortable doing that, or you're like, let's do it, it's not forbidden, let's do it?
I don't know. I mean, as I said, we pretty much tried trial and error. Like, we didn't even know how far we have to walk and what the best way is to walk from the train station down to the lake and stuff like that. So we pretty much just give it a shot, tried it. And yeah, it's definitely nicer if you can do that in a dry wetsuit than doing it the other way around. But depending on which direction the wind goes, like sometimes I would downwind first and then take the train. So I normally just bring a extra wind jacket to kind of have like a wind blocker over everything. Once I'm on the water or downwinding, I'm never cold. I'm normally almost sweating. So it's more the part when you actually get to the destination and have to wait for the train or walk to the train station. Yeah. That's when, with the wind chill and everything, when it gets cold. So I normally just bring extra stuff. And otherwise, like I guess with the trains that go from, or the two trains that go from Saint-Blaise all the way up to Concise or Gorgia now, the advantage is they have like an even floor. Like, you can get in and you pretty much put your boards right at the entrance, so you don't have to actually get, like, it's not like the high speed trains where you actually have like you have to walk in and they're narrow and whatever. Like, it's actually pretty easy to get in and off those trains, and yeah, you try to not be in the way too much of people. But yeah, I mean, we haven't had issues. We have been checked with tickets and stuff. But actually, it was funny the other day. Like, so the guy who checks the tickets, so he checked my ticket and whatever. And then just before I got off, he came back. Oh, it's awesome, man. I just started to get into wing foiling. Right. I'm not doing that. So,
nice.
So it was really cool. So it's like, yeah. And then you always get like questioning people. Always, like, either they just look at you like weird, or they even ask, what are you guys doing? What's the plan here? But yeah, it's always interesting conversations on the train.
But you don't put covers on your foils?
No, I don't, just mainly because otherwise I have to storm somewhere. Yeah, so yeah, it's just easier to, like, yeah, you have to be a little more careful. And sometimes, like, if I leave the foil somewhere, I just hang my life vest around it, so people like pay attention to it. And yeah, if you just in the entrance, normally it's not too much of a deal, or you'd be standing next to it anyway. So that's kind of like how we try to, yeah, make it as easy as possible on other people, like trying to get on the train and stuff. So yeah,
that's super cool. And you have this WhatsApp chat where you talk to other ones. Let's go there. How the wind looks and whatnot. And one topic that comes up quite often is the shoe issue, because you have these surf shoes or boots and you walk on the street, they break eventually. Let's talk gear for a second, and maybe not just the shoes, but that could be a topic as well. How do you start? Which board did you take? How many boards did you go through? Because we've heard that you start with a bigger board and then you have to change to a smaller board, and I guess it gets smaller at the time, they get better, whatnot. Let's talk gear for a second.
Well, do we start with how I got into it at the beginning?
Yeah, let's see that. Like, let's see that. Yeah, it's chronologically.
Let me get to the gear. So yeah, pretty much for me, like when I decided coming back from Australia, like I want to get into it. Like, I go like
on the plane.
Well, pretty much like back then, like, and then nobody, like even now, I don't think too many shops store them, like, or have them in stock or anything. So I came back, and then pretty much what I did first was sign up with the James Casey, the Coach Casey, yeah, like whatever his coaching course. That's the online course. So for me, that was like, otherwise, like, how I have nobody who can even tell me how to. Well, I knew how to paddle straight on a stand up paddle, yeah, but like that was more for fun, and then it was just cruising around. So it was nothing, not that I was really into it or anything. So for me, that was kind of the first part, like all the technique part and what to do. So that was kind of the first part that I did, or the first thing I did. And then I pretty much said, well, I can just use my pump foil board, or pump foil that foil, I still, yeah, the foil, actually the foil I still had around, which was Axis 1130, 1150 PNG, that I still had sitting around from pump foiling, which I started with for pump foiling, but then didn't use a whole lot because I was using smaller foils for pump foiling. So I thought, well, I already have the foil, so I need a board. So I looked for a board. Nobody has them in stock. And I actually found a used one, an Apple Tree one in Germany on eBay. So I emailed the guys, are you okay, like, shipping it to Switzerland? I goes, yeah, no, it's too expensive. So I ended up like shipping it to Germany and pick it up there. So that was pretty much the first board. I think it was 110 liters, was 21 wide, 7'2", probably, something like that. So
how much you weigh?
82 kilos plus then all the gear. So
30 liters more than your weight.
Yeah, about about that. So it was summer, spring, so I didn't wear the thick wetsuit. Yeah. So I was kind of, that was how I got into it. So then I took advantage of having the lake pretty much in front of my house and just tried to do the first, like, trying to paddle straight, stand on a board, all that stuff. So then I go, well, it can't be that tough. Normally I'm pretty good at learning or picking up new things. So it can't be that tough. And at the same time, like, I figured out pretty quick, like, the progress pretty, like, slow. Like, just there's so many things involved to get it right. And, like, looking back, I always have people ask me, well, how long did it take you? I go, like, well, I probably spent 50 hours just till the first time I felt comfortable to go from place A to place B. Okay. It wasn't that I was falling from place A to B, but it was obviously a combination of doing, well, flat water at the beginning, but then also James told me pretty quick, like, try it in the bumps, because that's where you learn the most. That's where it's easier to get on foil, but it's also more difficult to stand on your board, to get the timing right, all that stuff. So actually at the beginning, I did a lot of, not really runs, but I worked on my paddle ups in bumps at the Lake Morton, because it's pretty small. It's close from here, and there's pretty easy. You can walk up to the harbor, get in, and then it's, I don't know, 200 meters, 300 meters down with the waves, and then you get back out and do just that loop a couple times. So that's
kind of,
you
have to take, like, the algae off.
Yeah, exactly.
After a couple of meters. So.
Exactly. That's the only downside. There's a lot of seagrass and seaweed right there. But that's kind of like... I also brought the gear on vacation to Croatia that summer. That's kind of like, I remember that was the first time I actually got up in bumps, like in the ocean. I thought, well, it should be easier anyway with the salt water, getting more lift. But even there, like, it was just working on the paddle technique, working on everything. But I remember, like, that's the first time I got up. And for me, that was like just that first time, the sensation to get up. It wasn't even flat water. It wasn't the bumps. But suddenly, you know, well, it's possible.
Yeah.
So that kind of changed a little, also, like, my mindset. And from then I tried also to do it more in bumps, either Lake Morton, also Lake Neuchâtel. There are a few short runs you can do, like, normally go out, try for 500 meters, go back to shore, walk back up. So I did a lot of those,
but
short
always
loops.
With wind pumps, never with boat wakes.
No, I always tried with wind, but, like, I mean, I've wake foiled, I've tried other stuff, but for me, like, getting up was always wind pumps, because I knew, like, well, first, like, you have a lot of tries where, like, if you're waiting for boat wakes, you have sometimes one try and then you wait another half an hour. So for me, that was something that came later. If there's no wind, sometimes I do that and try to do some wake thieving on the sup. But at the beginning for me was just in the bumps and do short runs and just getting used to stand on the board, like the proper technique, like how do I get up the most efficiently? How can I stand on the board and then just try to get up? And, like, once I got up, then at the first time you're happy if you fall 20 meters and the next time it's 50 meters. So for me, it was just, or I think it's just tough, like, to learn the downwinding, because before you can even think about, like, the foiling or actually the foiling part, you have to figure out the starting part. And that's one of the toughest things, especially if you don't come from, like, stand up paddling and don't have the proper paddle technique and everything. So that it's just time consuming to, well, first you have to build the muscle strength, the technique. There's so many things involved. And it's also like the combination of paddling, pumping, like all those things have to line up perfectly, because sometimes it's just one paddle stroke. You don't hit properly and you're not getting on foil. So it's that part that makes it tough. And, like, especially here in Switzerland, where, like, things like foil drive is not allowed to use, and you can't really, you don't have really a cheat code. Sure, you can downwind on a wing and whatever to start reading bumps and stuff. But for the paddling, you actually have to paddle up by yourself to get into the bumps and figuring it out from there. So that's kind of like, which is just time consuming.
Would parawing be a cheat for you as well?
I don't know. I haven't tried it. I guess, like, to get up, I think it's just, compared to a wing, you actually can store it away.
Yeah, you don't even have to wear a paddle then or hold a paddle. That
paddle, well, for me, like, the paddle, I always said, well, I played professional hockey with a hockey stick in my hand for over 20 years, so I almost feel weird if I don't have any.
You should paddle up with the hockey stick once.
I should try that. We'll see if it's possible. But yeah,
so, let's come back to gear though.
Yeah,
you start with that axis foil with the apple tree board, and then what?
Yeah, I actually had that for quite a while. So I started doing runs on Lake Morton. I did a couple of runs. There's possible to do it with the train too. The problem there is you don't have a whole lot of fetch, or otherwise the runs are really short because the lake's quite small. Yeah. And then I did a few runs, Lake Neuchâtel. I had people just dropping me off in Neuchâtel or Nidecroix. That's where the big swimming thing is, or one of the harbors there. So that's normally what I did back to Saint Blaise, and that was still on that gear. And then I thought, well, I also had like Takuma, was the 14, I think it was the 1400, 1401. I don't remember what it was called. Yeah, the 1400 Takuma, whatever they were called. So I had that as a pump foil, and they go like, well, this will be the next foil to downsize to. Yeah. And I actually had the Armstrong pump foil that just came out. What's they called? The whatever the pump foil, the big
APF
1300. I don't remember. So I had that for a little bit because I thought, well, it's a more modern foil, it should be a little easier, a little better glide than the PNG. I never had like a 1300 PNG. This is kind of like what I would recommend to people to get into because it still has a decent glide. Because otherwise, that's the kind of the downside with the pump foil. Even though you get them up pretty quick, they also pretty slow. Once you kind of want to connect bumps, it's slow. Well, it's all about pumping then because you don't have the glide. So I tried that for a little bit, and then I actually tried that Takuma. I normally did a run with my setup I knew, and then I would just change foils and go out in the bay and walk up a little bit and try just pretty much the end of the run. I would just try like a smaller gear to get comfortable about paddling it up. And like once I got that 1400 paddle up, Takuma, for me, that was the first time where I actually feel like you feel the glide because it has just way more glide than the pump foils. And for me, that was kind of like quite a switch from then on. Like it was easier to connect bumps, to trust the glide and don't feel like I have to pump all the time. So I was on that foil for, I don't know, probably half a year. I was just using that in pretty much any conditions, unless it was super light. I went back to the pump foil, but that was working really well. So I went to that. And at the same time for wing foiling, I was still doing some wing foiling. Normally I would just wing foil pretty much to figure out the gear. So I would just use my downwind boards, actually use the smaller foil, put it on to figure out like what position it has to be, like what's the feeling once I'm up on foil. So I would just do that and pretty much do everything with the downwind gear. So that was
smart. Yeah, cool.
For me, that was the best way to, like, I think the other tough part with the stand-up paddling is just because it's really tiring, especially to get up at the beginning. You can only do it for so long, like, you know, especially flat water paddle ups, if you do 10 tries normally you toast. Like I always say, like, people say, well, pump foiling is tough too. I go like, well, I know to start to pump foil, but you can jump 100 times off the dock and there's a chance that your 100th try is better than your first one, and you get to start where, like, if you try 10 times to flat water paddle up, you're toast. Like, even though your technique might be better on the 11th time, but you don't have the strength anymore, so you pretty much just yeah, it's almost useless. I mean, you can still work on some paddle technique and stuff, but that's I guess the other downside, just because energy wise and then fatigue wise it's tough. So even if you do a run, as you said, you do a 5k run, it takes you an hour and a half, you toast, and then you go like, well, now I can't go and try to pedal up a smaller foil. But you can take out your wing, take the same gear, go out and try the same thing with the wing just to get a feel for it. So I used to do that for a little bit. And then at the same time, I still gotten my first coat foil, I guess, with being on the James Casey coaching, like on his coaching, you also get access to this Facebook page. Like he runs and gives some coaching tips and stuff. So then you get to know, like, well, coat foils, cut launched. And so I gotten the 850S just for wing foiling. Actually, I wasn't really doing it anymore, but I still had that foil. And then I always said, well, when are you going to bring out the bigger foil that I could actually use for downwinding? And then they finally released, I think the 1130 was the next one, which was quite a step down from my 1400 Takuma. And Takuma Kujira 1400 was, so it was quite a step down. So you needed quite a lot of wind, and it wasn't easy to paddle that up. And they finally brought out the 1300. Now they have the 1540 out. So I kind of stuck with that, the coat gear, which really worked well for me. I know I guess it was proven if you have guys designing it, they mainly about downwinding, you know, they have that intention in the back of their mind. So I was sticking with that. I was just, first I went to the 1130S. So, and then I was happy they brought out the 1300S, which was closer to my 1400 Takuma. And then I could pretty much, it was a little different. It had like, you needed more speed to get up, but once you're up, you had way more glides. So it was easier to keep the speed. So it was a little change of technique. That's also why if people ask me, should I start with a pump foil? I go, well, there's pros and cons to it. I guess the pro is it's the easiest way to get up. But once you go change to a different foil, to actually a downwind foil, you have to almost relearn it because the technique's a little different, where on the pump foil, you can get some speed and then pretty much pump it up, where on a actual downwind foil, you generate speed, and then you get up. So the technique's a little different. But so that was kind of like what foil-wise I'm still using. I also tried the R foils, the high aspect foils from Cope foils, which work well as well. But for the lake, I feel like with the S, it's enough glide. The bumps are close together anyway, and for me, it's easier to turn them. You get a little less glide, but they're still pretty good for what they are. And then board wise, I've tried plenty of boards. So at the beginning, like, I was frustrating. I couldn't get up for flat water pedal up. So I go like, well, if I go a narrower board, that's a little more efficient. It might be worth it. Then I had an Armstrong board for a little bit. I tried that. So for me, it wasn't like a huge difference. Or the biggest difference was almost a kilo lighter. I think with the Armstrong or the Apple Tree board, the downside with having that HD foam, which doesn't take up water, but at the same time, it's a little heavier. So I was also, mine was a prototype, an early one. So it wasn't probably like the best board that was out there, but it was the only board I could get a hand on at that time. So I got an Armstrong board when they finally were available here in Switzerland. So I tried that, and I tried the Duatom board. I tried a whole bunch of different boards because I couldn't talk to anybody and go ask them, well, is this board any good? Can I try it? Because nobody else had any boards in Switzerland. So I pretty much just tried to find deals or got hooked up somewhere. And then I was on the KT Dragonfly for quite a while. I love that because it was super light and quite efficient.
That's this gray red one.
Exactly. Gray orange ones. Yeah. Those were the ones that you could get a hand on pretty quick in Europe. I think that was...
How about the length though? How long does it need to be?
Well, there's... It's
for the lake, let's talk like Neuchâtel, for lake. Example.
So pretty much the board I have right now is a custom from 52 foil boards in France. So it's a custom. I went 710 by 18, 115 liter. Okay. So to get speed, you probably can even go longer than 710, but I had a longer board. So I had an 8.4, I had an 8.6 Amos shape bullet, which was then really long, which was easy for the paddle up, but at the same time, like, now I have the technique and the bumps are normally pretty steep in Switzerland, so I didn't feel like I needed the length for the paddle up. And then you just had more board, and also it was a little more difficult to get in on the train and stuff. So for me, like, that 710 was for me, or is still, the sweet spot for me as far as length goes. For myself, at 115 liter, I probably can get away with 110 liters, especially in summer times, but with bringing extra gear, with the wetsuit, everything in wintertime, I'm happy to have a little extra volume. So that's why I ended up with the 115 liter. So that's where I'm at. I also have a longer board from 8.4 by 17 from Greg from 52 foil boards. So that was mainly the plan, to use it for the races in Crozant, or use it in on the ocean to get some easier paddle ups with smaller foils. We didn't really use it in Crozant because there was no wind, but that's a different story. But so that's kind of like board wise. But otherwise, like, if people ask me, like, also on the bottom shape, like, there's so many discussion, what's better, flat bottom, a round bottom. To me, like, the current boards, they all at the decent level, and afterwards it's more about technique, or like
getting used to it probably as well, right?
Yeah, it's more about getting used to it, because I probably have to change technique between having a round bottom and a flat bottom. Yeah. So a round bottom normally glides, so like the first 2-3 paddle stroke are easier because it just glides quicker. But then the phase where you kind of pumping it up, paddling it up, like where you still touch down. I feel like it's more difficult there because you have nothing that puts you flat. So if you're just a little at the angle, like it just keeps tilting. Going at the angle. So for that, I think it's a little more difficult. So for me, it's like pros and cons to both shapes, their iterations and stuff like that. For me, at the end, it's all about getting used to. At the same time, it makes probably sense to spend a little more. For me, like weights, once you're up on foil, that's what you notice, because you can talk about paddle ups and stuff, but normally I try to paddle up as few times as possible anyway. So the paddle up part, it's less of an issue than like it would be at the beginning. But yeah, normally everything, I'd say, for if somebody gets into it, like either you get a used one, which is around 20, 21 wide, and I say like between 130 and 140% of your weight, like your foiling weight, including wetsuit. So for me, probably at about 90 kilos with wetsuit, life vest and everything. Yeah. So from 90, I have an extra 25 kilos, which is probably around 30% extra.
Yeah.
So you're at the 130. If you're a beginner, you might go up to 140, then you'll probably end up with 120 liter board. That's kind of like about like the calculation I do, but at the same time, like then it depends on board shapes and stuff like that. And the other thing, length always helps. It's easier for first to go straight, it's easier to glide. It's also volume wise, it's the distribution is nicer. The board doesn't get that thick. If you have a really short board, it gets really thick and you're kind of far away from the foil. So that's the other downside. That's also one of the reason I like the 52 foil boards. They have really bulky or almost square rails, flat bottom, but the advantage is like you can distribute the volume really out, and so you can make the board thinner because you have volume to all the way edges. To the edges, so the board gets a little thinner. So that's what I like, and they super light. That's
so kind of like so many different possibilities. How important is the paddle?
I think it's probably sometimes overlooked, because at the end it's what gives you the power to like get the speed and whatever, even though I don't think I've ever seen anybody paddling up a foil only paddling without pumping. But at the same time, if you have a flexi paddle and you don't get that crisp stroke, it's tough. But at the same time, then like it doesn't really matter if you spend $300 or $500. It's at the end, it's still paddle technique to get the catch properly. That's still a part. Also paddle length. There are a few different theories, like how long this should be.
Where does your come?
I'm like an inch over my height. So I'm 1.87 meters tall, and my paddle is at 1.90 meters. So it's like 3 centimeters over my head. I tried shorter paddles, which I felt was good because it made me use more my legs because I had to bend down more. But then I switched back to the taller one and figured if I keep using my legs the way I did with the short paddle but use the long paddle, then I'm still more efficient. And I actually just had to try a long paddle the other day because I forgot to actually pack my actual paddle, but I still had that broken one in my in my car. So it was actually in two parts, but I never cut the shaft because the handles ding. So I had it in my car to get it repaired. And they go like, well, should I go home? But then I'm too late to do a long run. So I go like, well, I'll just duct tape it together. So I had actually paddle that was like, I don't know.
And probably pretty flexy as well.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. So the blades split in the middle. So I put some tape around it. So it wasn't terrible, but it was just mainly the paddle length that was different. So it was weird to paddle with a paddle that's like 10 centimeters longer than what I'm used to. It was nice, like once you paddle up, like in between phase, you could like still paddle for quite long. So it was nice for that part, but I couldn't get any power down at the beginning. It was just, I guess it's also there kind of getting used to. So
it's also technique. We had Lucas on foil only. Right. I don't know if you've seen him. He got up with a broom.
Yeah.
Probably with a big foil though, but still,
So yeah, like I think, but those things show that at the end, it's a lot about the pumping. I think the pumping is more important than the paddling. But at the same time, if you only have the pumping, especially the smaller foils, you have no chance either. So, I guess paddle, it's worth it. At the beginning, I had a super big paddle. I think I had, I just use the biggest paddle I can get a hand on, and that will work. So I think it was a Gong. It was 120 square inches, which is like huge, which worked all right with the big pump foil because like first, like your pumping amplitude's like slower. So also if you like your paddle stroke are slower, it doesn't really matter. But once you get into smaller foils where the cadence more important, like you can't just keep up. And then it was pretty hard on my body too. So now I'm down to like an 85 square inch paddle, which looks super small, but you just, you adjust the technique and I definitely wouldn't go too big. I would try to stay around or under 100 square inches. A lot of it's about 85, between 80 and 90, I guess. And then like, probably smaller, smaller guys can use a little smaller paddle just because it's less tiring on the body. So that's kind of like, then they're adjustable ones, I guess. There are pros and cons to it. Like you can figure out your preferred paddle height, but at the same time, they normally are a little heavier, they're a little flexier. And the other thing, boring thing, is that they normally still take water, and then every 3 paddle ups you have to take the shaft out, like empty them, and to put the handle back in. So there are pros and cons to everything, but for me it was like once I figured out like what range I want to be in, I go like, well, this is what I try and this is what I stick with for the next whatever 3 weeks, 6 weeks, and then it's even there it's more getting used to.
All right,
and how was your experience with Casey, and how did you actually get to work?
Hang on, we're going to come to that later. Kyle, I just want to, in terms of gear and what you said before, if you have a longer board, the pump is more exhausting or less cool. But we had Yvonne Labart. He does downwinders on his pump foil. Have you ever tried that? Because you are such a pro, you probably just go down if you want to. Or do you fall sometimes still? Is that something you would want to try as well?
No, because the fun part about like having or this having the safety that you knowing like no matter what I can paddle back up normally, like for me that lets me try things. Like I try to carve a little higher or harder. I try to like glide a little longer, really work the bottom end of the foil, or try like turns, or try to connect without pumping, or try to race, or like just try different things, because I know if I make an error, like for me, otherwise I would be just safety foiling, which like not to fall, be efficient, like
too boring.
It's for me that like for me, the fun part is like the surfing part or going fast, and it always can happen something, and rather be like, obviously like testing the limits and knowing, well, even if I go over the limit, if I fall, like then I can get back up. I mean, if I want to do a run that I can ace it, like normally it's not too tough anymore. Like there's always depends on the condition, but I normally can do it. But then you do safety foiling, which is okay to a certain extent. But then for me, it's the fun part is like to do turns, to try different lines, to get more radical. And then there's always something that can happen. Sometimes it's just a wave that you didn't expect, or you have whatever, catch an edge, or like breach your foil a little too much and you come off foil, and then like with a pump foil board you probably swimming for quite a while, and with the downwind I pretty much paddle up next wave again and start all over again.
For all the listeners, we've just put in some b-roll, so you can see Jonas do these crazy turns, so go on YouTube, watch as well. If you're on YouTube, it doesn't just say sleep here, it says sleep, eat, pump, repeat. Shout out to the foil mate, to the perfectly cool app, saying where you have good dogs. So just a shout out, and don't think that I just sleep. Gal, you wanted to say something before.
Yeah, because I think that it's quite interesting to hear your experience with Casey, and how actually it works now. And I guess he has like coaches all around the world, and you are one of them.
Yeah, so that was, for me, like when I got, as I said, I pretty much, for me, that was like the only thing or knowledge base out there that I could like get a hand on at the point when I started, which was about 2 years ago. Pretty much his online course, he had like pretty much online modules that you can go through for, is it like for supping, but also like paddle technique, pumping technique, whole bunch of stuff. And then he always has like through his, like the Facebook group that's only for members. Like he always does a Talkback Tuesday, that's what he calls it. So it's pretty much you can upload videos and he goes through them on an online call. For me, that was like the most valuable things, even though sometimes sure I uploaded my proper videos, but even just going through videos from other people that are in a similar phase, like you learn so much. And there's always some discussion, talk back, and you kind of start to get to know people. And I always really like talking to James. He was super, super nice guy and super knowledgeable about falling. So that's kind of what it started. And then I also, I think we started chatting back and forth a little bit. If he's thinking about like having coaches or doing like coaches kind of thing, because for me, it was always like, well, I love the sport so much. I want as many people as possible, like who can feel that same sensation and can get into it. And I know like coaching definitely helps, even though you have to go through the whole part. You can't take too many, it takes time no matter what, but I still think with coaching and just knowing somebody's watching after you, even if you do runs and stuff like that, it would definitely have helped me big time. And the online part, it helps, but it's always like you do something, you make a video, you upload it, a week later he's looking at it, then you don't get conditioned, so it's always delayed. So having like actual coaching, like even if you go out together and like give some pointers here and there, like I think it helps big time. So it was always also nice to have with Simon, to have somebody who's at the similar level, you push each other, you kind of learn from each other. And for me, it was always like, I thought, well, I want to help people to get to that same sensation, because I know it's not an easy path to take, and it takes some time. So that was the first part. And then also signed up to his, he always does coaching trips. So he has one trip, you're in the Maldives for on the boat for 10 days. So I signed up. Actually, when I signed up, I was still wing foiling. So I thought, well, this would be great to go wing foiling with him. And meanwhile, till the actual camp happened, like I really gotten into downwinding, but luckily there are a few other guys. So it's pretty much a foil camp. You're on a boat for 10 days. They take you wherever the best waves are, where the best spots are. So that's when I first met him in person. And we definitely had some discussion there. And I go like, well, I'd love to like teach people. And he goes like, yeah, he's thinking about it. Because for me, it was always like, sure, I can teach people one-on-one, but does it make sense to do pretty much whatever he has already? All the videos and the online tool, what he has already, does it make sense for me to pretty much copy what he has and do everything by myself? I go like, no, it doesn't really make sense. I'd rather send people there if they want to just get some basic knowledge. And that's kind of like how we figure it out also with the other people or other coaches interested, that let's do like a combination where we can use or send people to his platform. We do the coaching together there. So the online part, so the Talkback Tuesday, normally once a month, I'm doing that with James together. So we can go into specific part, what's like area, like in Switzerland, like the conditions are a little different. So I go through videos that are specific about Switzerland and stuff like that. So that's the one part. And the other part's also like, the plan is long-term to do some coaching or do some camps where we can do it in Europe, where he doesn't have to travel everywhere. So there's John Mann, who's in the Netherlands, and we could run a camp here in Europe and do stuff like that. So the idea is to pretty much just bring everybody together and grow together improve each other's foiling by just having that community, that exchange, and hopefully, get as many people as possible into foiling or especially downwinding, which is my big passion at the moment.
It's really cool. But have you had any students here?
Yeah, I've done some private classes before. So I've also I'm still on my to-do list to finish the website. So there's subfoil.ch is where the website should be. There's some basic information on there right now. So the idea is to have the whole site also with the information on runs, what I would recommend, like gear, stuff like that. There's plenty of knowledge around, but I think there's not really a source yet. So that's definitely something I'm planning on doing. There's more work involved than I thought, but it is what it is. But it's definitely something I'm looking into. And pretty much the students I have was pretty much word to mouth. So people would just recommend me or ask me, and I'm happy. If you want to take contact, there's the email address on subfoil.ch. If you want to contact me, or Instagram, like I'm happy to share.
What's your Insta handle?
Insta handle is JH1_JonasHiller. All right. I think maybe you have to.
We're gonna put it up here or up over there.
I always forget my own.
For who's listening, is a JH1_ Jonas with a J_ Hiller.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you're welcome.
If you're asking why there's a one in there, because that was always my jersey number. So, but I was still from hockey.
I can imagine.
And then.
But if you don't mind, I want to talk a bit about that, because I'm interested. If you can just quickly go over how was like at 18 years old, going from signing into a big team like that?
Hockey wise, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, for me, I started playing hockey when I don't remember, 5 or 6 years old. For me, it was just always a hobby. And then, once you get a little older, I started in Herisau. Back then, they still had a professional team in the second division. Then you always think, well, maybe at some point I'll be able to play at that level and maybe make some money at some point. But for me, it was always a hobby. I was never like the big talent back then. I never was in a junior national team or anything. So for me, it was like always a hobby. And then when I was, I think with 16, I just started the gymnasium, which is like high school. I started that in a regular school and would just go back and forth with the train from Appenzell to Herisau and then go to practice and try to do my homework at the same time. So if I look back to that, I don't know how I managed to do it. But I always had the passion for the sport and try to get better every time. And then when I was 18, almost by incident, I got a chance to sign a deal with Davos, which is still one of the top teams in the highest league in Switzerland. I was able to sign a deal there as a backup goalie and finish school at the same time. So they have a sport gymnasium, which you have an extra year. You have fewer classes a week, so you have more time to practice. So it's just everything you pretty much have. At the end, you have the same degree, but it just you have a year longer to do everything. So I was able to do that. But even back then, I was a backup goalie. But yeah, I remember like being 18, you suddenly walk into the dressing room and you have guys there you only knew from TV and stuff. So it was just a weird experience. Even though I think back when I signed, they had also a few guys, they were already playing in the NHL, like Swiss-Ski is playing in North America. You only would know him from computer games or TV and you suddenly sit next to him. And I remember that was like super strange at the beginning, but you get into it. Like, I think hockey is pretty cool about it. Like, even it was similar when I signed in North America. What was that, 2007, when I first time got into dressing room in the NHL, you suddenly sit next to guys that you only knew from TV and computer games. So it was the same thing again, but even there, like, guys are pretty good about it. I mean, sure, you have to earn your respect, but at the same time, they're pretty open and welcoming. And, at the end, it's a team sport and everybody knows it. And, for me, it was great experience. And even thinking back now, I still sometimes get goosebumps that it wasn't just a dream, it was actually reality. So for me, it was great and something that I was super happy and a great experience.
It is. I mean, it's impressive. I tried to research a little bit, and he's been in the national team. I don't know if you're the best goalie or one of the three best there's ever been in Switzerland. So that's really impressive. That's super cool. Do you still play? Do you still have?
No, actually, people always ask me, and they go like, pretty much when I packed up, so I retired in 2020. I retired. Professionally, I played 7 years in Switzerland, so six of them in Davos, one in Lausanne. Then I signed in North America, played 9 seasons, so 7 seasons in Anaheim, 2 seasons in Calgary. Came back to Switzerland and played another 4 years in Biel. So I retired 2020, and the bag or my equipment I packed when I retired is still sitting in my garage the same way I actually packed it when I retired.
Oh, nice.
I've skated a couple times. I've done some charity things, but I normally always say, well, I'm coming, but I only come as a forward or a defenseman. I'm not going to go in goal or in net. So I've done 2 or 3 of those. But at the same time, like, if somebody asks me, do you want to go skating or you want to go underwater? I go water every time. So even though it's freezing and I have to probably put more gear on than I would have for hockey, like, I still rather go. I don't know. I mean, I still teach, I help with goalie coaching in Bern with the junior kids. I still really enjoy doing that and kind of sharing my experience I have from hockey. I still love doing that, but the passion to go on the ice and I don't know, it's there are other things. For me, it's almost like I pretty much spent so much time, like, or energy and everything. Like, for me, hockey was like the thing, and I would do everything to be as successful as possible in hockey, that like a lot of other things had to put aside. So now I'm almost trying to pick up, like, or take advantage of having the option to take advantage of things that I wasn't able to do during hockey. So it's almost like I have spent so much energy and things and thoughts into hockey that now I'm kind of bored up with it. So that's kind of like what it feels. I still do some work for the players union, so that's still, but it's less of on a daily base, or you don't follow the schedule and stuff, but it's more like kind of organizing the players, giving them a voice. So that's still how I'm involved into hockey, but as I said, I've never put my goalie gear on again.
Is you have kids as well, are they more into the hockey part or the water part, or do they do other things?
I mean, I try to like show them as many things as possible. We've been skating, they've been trying to foil. I've pulled them behind the boat, and they were either on the stomach, on their knees. I mean, they like doing different stuff. It wasn't like they, whenever we were skating, they go like, oh, I really want to go to hockey practice. They in athletics right now, so they're doing that for a little bit. They play some instruments. So I try to just show them as many things as possible. I don't feel like I want to push them in any direction. For me, sure, the dream is that they do some water sport and they can hopefully do some downwinders together at some point in the future. But they're still like 8, 7, and 10 years old, so they kind of young for the foiling part. But we'll see where it takes. I just try to show them what's out there, and then I'm happy if they enjoy any sport. I'm not really too particular about it.
That's super cool. Well, we're already over an hour. Gal, do you have anything else?
No, that's fine. Yeah, I think we covered everything. So now, just to throw some context, besides foiling, so you're a retired pro player, and you're doing these events, coaching sometimes.
So for me, it's like, I have a few gigs at the same time. So yeah, sure, I'm retired, so I'm kind of flexible there. I look after the kids for half the time. I also, pretty flexible in the morning. I still try to downwind here and there. I love skiing. I was just skier touring the last couple of days. So there's always things to do. And as I said, almost things that I couldn't do because of hockey when I was younger. So I try to make up for it a little bit. I'm still involved with hockey and for a little bit. But I guess downwinding is still the big passion at the moment. I still try to do runs myself, but I also love teaching people and trying to get people to have the same sensation. And it looks like we got quite a decent community together. If I look at the WhatsApp group, I probably have like over 90 members. I don't know how many of them they actually do downwind runs, but I think for me it's cool to see people getting into, and I always love to share my passion, my stoke for the sport. And if I can teach somebody little things, or if somebody wants to sign up to do a private coaching, whatever, I'm happy to do so. It's not always easy to arrange with not having any thermal winds, just relying on weather patterns. It's not always easy, but I try to make it work. And I really enjoy having that freedom. And we'll see where it takes me.
That is super cool. Just before we announce the next guest, you give classes. You said that you want to try the paroing. You're building your website. Is there anything else that you want to try? Maybe the foil drive thing that you mentioned before or something?
No, for me, like, I still have that on the bucket list. I still have the downwind races in Hawaii. So the big ones. So that's still on my bucket list. I don't know if it's already, if I'm ready and for already this, like in 2025, or if it's going to be 2026. So that's still up there. So that's kind of also, like, for me, it's less about like also the races. For me, it's less about like winning them or having like high hopes or anything. For me, it's also like pushing myself and then kind of having a goal again, and also like just meeting people. And it's always like, great atmosphere. It was great also in Crozon, despite not having like, well, we had the two races, despite not having the conditions we hoped for, just the event and everything, the people, to get to know people. Otherwise, you only know from Instagram or whatever, like to get them to know in person. It's great. So Hawaii is definitely the big races. That's something I'm looking for or hoping to be able to join at some point. So there are definitely a few things. And I think there's still plenty of space on even Lake Neuchâtel to have more downwinders there. You might get a little crammed on the train, but otherwise on the lake, it's normally not the issue. And
In Crozon, did you do the pump foil race as well?
No, I only signed up because since I started downwinding or subfoiling. I pretty much haven't touched the pump foil board. So I didn't even know if I could still start from the dock again. So I'm pretty much focused on the downwinding part. In hindsight, I probably could have signed up for the dock starting, but then you would have to like work on my technique again and stuff. So it was also good just to watch it as a spectator and have some thinking for other. I just saw like the guys who would do all three of them, like do also the prone, the dock starting and the downwinding. Like they were, it was super stressful. And I'm not getting younger either. So I need my extra recovery days if you have to.
Especially after a run where there's no wind and no bumps, right?
Well, exactly that. And then like you pretty much compete against 16 and 18 year old kids that, I don't know, they seem to never get tired. And I'm happy if I can put my feet up and recover a little longer.
If you want to hear about the Pump Foil Race, episode 6 of Up and Fall, we had Gwen Le Tutour on the show. He talks about that. So go back and listen to that episode if you haven't listened already. The next episode, episode 20, is going to be with Gunnar Binjas. He is a wing foil race champion. Did R&D for North and Indiana. And it says, or I read somewhere, he's also a musician living in Fuerteventura, so looking forward to that. If you like our show, think about helping us out on Patreon, link in description. And Jonas, again, thank you very much for taking your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It was amazing.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me, and hopefully see you guys on the water somewhere.
Definitely.
For sure. That's for sure.
All right. Bye-bye.
See you.